Congratulations to Brian and Melissa. Good morning. Welcome to, I'm going to get a blank screen next, right?
Just click it once.
There you go, just like magic. Welcome to the first Sunday after the first full moon after the spring equinox, also known as
Easter.
Yes. Before we begin, I have a little Easter trivia question for you. Are you up for it?
Yes.
Some of you were in the first service, so you know the answer. But that's okay. The word Easter means A, springtime, B, time of rejoicing, C, the rising sun, or D, he is risen. What do you think it is? Just shout it out. All right, we have a lot of various ideas. It actually means the rising sun. Easter was originally, it comes from the word east, and it was originally celebrated as a welcome of the sun in the springtime, a return of the sun. And it was a tribute to the goddess Istra, also known as Ishtar. I got to tell you, the early Christians were masterful at taking the current pagan ritual that was being celebrated and Christianizing it. And so a ceremony of fertility and new life, bunnies and eggs, became a celebration of the resurrection of Jesus. So the rising sun became the rising sun, S-O-N. See the things you learn at church? And along with being Easter Sunday today, it is also what? April Fool's Day, yes. I've got a little background on that too. Back in the 1500s, the French used to celebrate the new year beginning on March 25th and ending on April 1st. And then the Gregorian calendar came along and they moved the beginning of the new year to January 1st. And there were some people who said no, they didn't like that. They refused to honor the change and they became known as April Fools. And to be honest, I agree with them. To me, January 1st does not feel like a new beginning. It feels like the middle of
winter.
Yes, it does. Time of dormancy, time of hibernation. Whereas April, the beginning of spring, on the other hand, has a real sense of a new beginning. And Easter falling on April 1st, there's an even greater feel for the resurrecting power of this time of year. Because when we look around, we really can see that things are rising up, right? There's new life happening. My talk title is Rising in Love. It's about rising up. We often hear about falling in love, but truly, isn't love more of an upward energy? Don't you find that to be true? Not a lot of falling going on at all. And we can take a look at the Easter story as a wonderful guide for us in our own arising, in our sense of rising up in our lives. It's the archetype of the heroic journey, the Easter story, complete with crucifixion experiences, those times of loss and challenge that show up, and the overcoming of those challenges can be the catalyst for us in growing into who we've come here to be. Would you agree? Getting beyond those things? And that resurrecting power fuels a new beginning for us, bringing change in our lives, bringing transformation, evolutionary transformation, which is what we're all about. So let's travel back a couple thousand years together this morning. Are you ready for that journey? And see what we can learn from the Easter story. So first of all, is it true or is it a myth?
Yes.
And the correct answer is, drum roll please. I don't know. But I do know this. that it really doesn't matter. That whether it is an accurate account of true events that happened 2,000 years ago, or whether it's mythological legend that grew up around the man Jesus, the importance is the truth that it contains, with a capital T. The truth that is within the story, contained within it. And that truth can transform our lives as we look within ourselves and discover what is our personal meaning here. How can we use this in order to transform our own lives? So I invite you to listen to this story with your heart this morning and see how it resonates with you. And we step into the story just as Jesus is being led to the palace of the high priest after coming from the Garden of Gethsemane. He's taken from the garden, taken to the palace of the high priest. And there he was given two trials, one with the Sanhedrin, the Jewish leaders, religious leaders, and the other with Pilate and Herod. Why was he given two? Anybody know?
No more to put a man to death.
Very good. Because the Sanhedrin could try religious and civil cases, but they could not pass the death sentence. Only the Romans could do that. Crucifixion was a Roman method of execution. If the Sanhedrin could have passed the death sentence, they would have used stoning. That's what they would have used. And then we would have all had little stones around our necks. And as he's being led from the courtyard, Jesus hears Peter give his third and strongest denial of him, just as the rooster crows, which is what Jesus has foretold will happen. And as I said at the first service, we have actual footage of that moment, cell phone footage of when that happened. And their eyes meet, and Peter breaks down weeping bitterly. So metaphysically, what does this mean? Well, you know, we know that Peter represents faith, Peter the rock, faith. And from this story, we can see that our faith wavers, you see. Sometimes being aligning with Spirit right in that moment of knowing the truth of who you are, knowing the power within you, and then wavering, denying that power. So for instance, imagine you want to decide, you decide you're going to lose 10 pounds. Anybody ever done that? And you, yes, decided. And you feel that power within you. You feel like this time I can do it. I have that power within me. I know it can be done. I can rise up. I can make this happen. And you might even begin with your affirmations and visualizing yourself and all that stuff. And then what happens in the next breath? We deny the possibility. Who am I kidding? This 10 pounds has been hanging around for decades. I've tried and tried and nothing's worked and it's impossible. When we do that, we are denying the truth about ourselves. We're denying our own inner power, our internal method of rising up and being able to change our lives. We are denying the Christ of our being. Anyone ever done this? Well, we can't talk about Easter without mentioning Judas. Judas the betrayer. You know, he was beside himself when he realized that Jesus actually was being killed. He thought that with him forcing his hand, he would rise up and be the king that they were expecting him to be. And so he attempted to give back the 30 pieces of silver, but to no avail. The deed was done. And so he hanged himself. Now, I find it very interesting that metaphysically, Judas represents life. Seems kind of curious. But Elizabeth Sand Turner, in her book, Your Hope of Glory, says this about Judas. In Judas, we find unredeemed life forces that, unless handled spiritually, betray the Christ or the spiritual self. And the way we might understand this is that within us, that spirit that is within us is pure. But we can use that life energy any way we want. It's like electricity. It can be used to save a life, or it can be used to take a life. And when Judas is in control, we give in to the senses. You know, we follow our sort of desires, selfishness. That's what happens when Judas is taken over. And we betray our true nature. Now, it's that voice that when we're trying to lose that 10 pounds, we're trying to have a new habit, says, oh, you may as well just go ahead and have a cookie. It's just one. And then, well, you may as well have a few more. And then you may as well finish the bag, because then it's done. It's gone. Do you know that voice? And am I the only one that has that voice? And then it's the same voice that when you take the empty package and throw it out says, well, you shouldn't have ought to done that. You're hopeless. And to overcome this betrayal of our true nature, to free ourselves from that voice, to work with our wavering faith, we have to dig deeper. You see, we have to find that resurrecting power that is within us to help us bring forth this divine essence that can lift us, that can carry us. It's greater than the voice of Judas. But we have to get time, take time in the stillness and listen. Pilate could find no fault in Jesus, so he sent him to Herod, who sent him back. Pilate tried to release him, but he eventually was persuaded to give the order for crucifixion, and he washed what?
His hands.
He washed his hands. It's not, this isn't on me. It took 6 hours for Jesus to die, and from the cross came the words, Father, forgive them, for
they know not what they do.
Let the beauty of those words really sink into your heart, because the power that allows that level of love and forgiveness to be expressed, it comes from a deeper place within our hearts. You know, the cross metaphysically represents the intersection of heaven and earth, and it's right here that that intersection takes place. It's right here that the resurrection takes place, in the heart. It's a rising in love. And Jesus' beautiful last words that are recorded were, into thy hands, I commend my spirit. Can you feel the total release in that? The total surrender to the divine? A giving up into something greater? That's rising in love. And with that, he gave up the spirit. Now, we hear an awful lot about the events of Good Friday and Easter Sunday, don't we? Have you ever wondered what the disciples did on Saturday? All it says in Scripture is that they rested because it was the Sabbath. And maybe they rested from physical labor. How much rest and peace do you think they were having? Yeah, not a lot. When we are going through those crucifixion times, how much rest and peace do we have in that in-between time? You know, it's a time of mourning. It's a time of grieving. It's a time of questioning. It's a dark night of the soul, asking ourselves, what could I have done differently? Why did I let my fear lead? All those things. Saturdays are not limited to the calendar. We walk through them all the time. We all have our crucifixion experiences, a loss of some sort, and then Saturday comes and we just have to walk through it. We have to walk through the emotions, we have to walk through the feelings of betrayal and the grief and the questioning, all of it. But the length of time that we stay there determines how long it takes for Sunday to come. Really. The chief priests had gone to Pilate, insisted that the tomb where he be laid be guarded with a stone, and some Roman soldiers had been stationed at the entrance to watch it. And then early on Christmas, not Christmas, it was Easter morning. Maybe it happened Christmas morning too, I don't know. Mary Magdalene and the other women arrive, and this is the April Fool's part of the story, you know. And what do they find? An empty tomb with an angel inside. And the angel says, do not be afraid, for I know that you seek Jesus who was crucified. He's not here, for he has risen. Let's look at this metaphysically. You know that angels are divinely inspired thoughts that we have? They are messages from the divine that come forth to us, and they tell us, you won't find that which has been crucified here, so don't look for it in the tomb. Why? Because it's been transformed. It has risen. Have you ever looked for the living among the dead, as it said? Have you ever looked to the past, anyone? Reliving old hurts and resentments or mistakes that you made? Yes. Anybody? Yes. You won't find the Christ there in the tomb. Why? Because our spiritual self is above it all. It's not mired in it. Do you see? Course in Miracles tells us truth does not battle with illusions. Illusions battle only with themselves. The resurrection lifts us above the illusion, rising in love. Isn't that cool?
Yes.
Really? We're talking here about evolutionary transformation. Deepak Chopra said, the symbolic language of the crucifixion is the death of the old paradigm. Resurrection is a leap into a whole new way of thinking. It's a letting go of the illusion so we can grow into a whole new paradigm of living. And that is not to downplay any suffering or any pain that you may be going through right now. Not in the least. We need to have great compassion for ourselves as we go through this and for each other. It's part of the human condition as we traverse this road together. But this story can give us hope. Do you see? As we stop focusing so much on the crucifixion, it gives us the spaciousness to step into the resurrection when we stop looking to the past. Because when we see a beautiful butterfly, do we grieve for the cocoon? When we see a baby chick, do we shed tears over the empty eggshells? No, we do not. Well, as we roll away the stone, step out of the tomb of our past, leave it behind, we can rejoice in this whole new paradigm of living. So the question we want to ask ourselves is, what have we allowed to be a stone hindering this paradigm shift? What's getting in the way? What has blocked us, shut us off from living joyously? Is the appearance of illness or disease your stone? Could it be feelings of low self-worth or lack consciousness? Could it be resentments or fear or guilt or a belief in separation? What is it in your life that has been stopping you from making that paradigm shift? Because the good news is this: we have imprisoned ourselves in a tomb of our own making. And that stone can be rolled away. Not by human might or forcing, you know, but through the power of Spirit, rising in divine love. It's the Spirit within us that overcomes the doubts and the fears that have kept us in bondage. And we have the ability right here and right now, every single one of us, to release those things as we move from Saturday to Sunday on our transformative journey. Do you know that about yourself? Unity's co-founder, Charles Fillmore, writes, Easter is the celebration of the rising of the triumphant Christ Spirit in you and me. The greatest gift of the Easter story is to call us to remember this, to remember that transformative, triumphant power within us. And this story is a roadmap that can guide us in our own reawakening to the truth of who we are. Love that story. Happy day. So let me share with you a story. This is the story of Anna from Amsterdam. And this story is told in Joe Dispenza's newest book, Becoming Supernatural: How Common People Are Doing the Uncommon. We're going to be doing a book study on this book in the fall, by the way, for those who are interested. So Anna was a successful psychotherapist. And she was sitting at home reading one beautiful spring day with her 12-year-old son and her 11-year-old daughter. Her husband had left mysteriously in the morning while she was still in the shower, after hugging both of his children goodbye, telling them that he loved them, and leaving. And she was having trouble reaching him. He wasn't answering his cell phone. And as the day went on, she became more and more concerned and wondered where he was. And then a knock came at the door. It seems her husband had jumped off one of the tallest buildings in the center of the city and committed suicide. Now, Anna's body went right into shock and survival mode in that moment upon hearing that news. And in fact, every single day, she returned to that shocking moment. And her body became overrun with the chemistry of high, high stress. And the memory was seared in her brain. It became neurologically branded. And she was stuck in an emotional loop of anger and sadness and guilt and shame and hopelessness and powerlessness and grief and overwhelm. Can you imagine? And that became her new identity. She couldn't get out of it. She was stuck in it. And this had come right out of the blue for her. Her husband had been a successful lawyer. He seemed happy. There was no sign that he was struggling in any way. But what she discovered after his death was that he had made some very bad financial decisions and that they were now deeply, deeply in significant debt. So as time went on and she sank deeper and deeper into despair, Anna was unable to work, so she lost her job. She was unable to keep paying for her house, so she lost her home. And then she lost her health. She woke up paralyzed one morning from the waist down, and the doctors discovered that her immune system was attacking her body, and she had no feeling or control in her legs, and she needed a walker and crutches to get around. She went on massive amounts of medications for that. She became clinically depressed and went on more medication for that. And she developed ulcers throughout her body, internally and externally, and ultimately ended up with cancer of the esophagus. So, Anna was an emotional, mental, physical wreck. Would you agree she was going through a crucifixion experience? Definitely. Well, she collapsed one day completely on the floor. Laying there, she prayed for help. And along came Dr. Joe Dispenza. A friend introduced her to his work. And as she began to understand what it was about, she decided she was going all in. She realized if she didn't change, she was going to leave her children completely orphaned. And so she became very motivated to heal, very committed to changing her life. And so she began to meditate twice a day with his work and became committed to experiencing and believing in a new future rather than being stuck in the past. Do you see that? That was a turning point for her. And she decided she would not get up from her meditation time the same person who sat down. That is Dr. Joe's teaching. If you get up a same person from your meditation than when you sat down, you haven't really meditated, he says. And she took that to heart. And so she stayed on that meditation cushion every day until her whole state of being was in love with her life. And the only way she could do that was by bringing forth elevated emotions of gratitude, compassion, and inspiration. And she did that over and over until she taught her body emotionally what a healthy future would feel like for her when she got there. And as Dr. Joe explains it, every day with a level of intensity that was greater than her addiction to past emotions, she practiced and got better and better at it. And this is what rising in love means. We experience that the future self now. Now, it took some time. For a year, nothing much changed. She had a long Saturday in there, but she never gave up. She was committed to healing, and finally, as she went along, after six years after her husband's death, the cancer was completely healed. She no longer had any ulcers. Today, she's back to work. She's a corporate trainer. She travels the world. She has a loving partner. She has happy relationships with her children and her friends. She has overcome that limited identity and grown into who she truly is by loving her life and rising in love. Do you see the power of this? As Dr. Joe writes in his book, Anna had become a new person who was healthy. The disease existed in the old personality. By thinking, acting, and feeling differently, Anna reinvented a new self. In a sense, she had become reborn in the same life. Now, I'm inspired by Anna. I don't know about you, but boy, it sure makes my little challenges shrink down. Really. Recently, Gary talked about the personality reality cascade and how to change within that cascade. This is an example of someone who really put that to the test, who really did the work. So the true message of Easter is not that you will never again experience loss or pain or a betrayal of some kind, but that the power within you is greater than any of those experiences. And that if you let go of the past and allow the divine self that you are to move through you, you will rise. You will rise to a new level of awareness, a new paradigm of living. Isn't that cool?
Yes.
Really. So use whatever is showing up in your life to grow beyond it. Do you see? To dig deeper and find your power. New Thought teacher Ernest Holmes writes, "The resurrection is the death of the belief we're separate from God." So move out of that story of separation into the reality of one life, living itself as you. Because entombed within all of us, our hopes, our dreams, our longings that may have been buried over these years, and contained within the beautiful Easter story, is the spiritual opportunity to resurrect all those things. What appears to be dead is just an illusion. So step into that future self. Feel the way you're going to feel when it manifests. That's the key. Norman Vincent Peale describes death as this: when you lose your eagerness, when you lose your sense of wonder, when you lose your ability to be deeply moved, when you never weep for a cause, when you no longer dream dreams or see vision, when life has become dull, dead, inert, though you may be 20 years old and physically healthy, something in you has died. It needs resurrection. So what needs resurrecting in your life? I invite you to allow that transforming power of divine love within you to roll away that stone, whatever it is, whatever that may be, whatever's been holding you back. And it doesn't matter how many times we may have denied our higher self or how we may have betrayed our spiritual nature. It doesn't matter how many spiritual detours we've taken, how much our faith has wavered. We can turn our attention to the power within right now and see beyond the illusion of separation as we rise in love. The time's always the present. The power's always in the moment. Resurrection is just a choice away. So are you ready to resurrect?
Yes.
Say it like you mean it.
Yes.
The same spirit of love that brought Jesus out of the tomb is calling you and you and you and you to arise and to come out of whatever is keeping you from being who you've come here to be and walk in the newness of life. Happy Easter to all of you.
Unity stands for peace in the presence of conflict, for love in the presence of hatred, and for forgiveness in the presence of injury. Unity honors the many names for God, the many paths to God, the many ways of worshiping God, for we know that there is only one power and one presence that is God, and that God loves us all equally. So whoever you are, and wherever you are on your transformational journey, if this is your first time with us today and you feel comfortable enough to raise your hand, our ushers have a packet of information for you today. Anybody here for the first time? The pressure's off. You don't have to be. I'll stop right there. All right, it's time for our fellowship song. So we'll stand and do our fellowship song, and then we'll meet and greet each other.
Wait for those grammar glasses to get on the face. Here we go.